This is the Legacy Wealth Code Podcast, helping you build long-term wealth and a lasting legacy through real estate investing, tax strategies, and motivational stories from some of the most successful and influential people out there. Here are your hosts, real estate investor and entrepreneur, Michael Notbaum, and real estate investor and attorney, Andrew Hook.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Legacy Wealth Code Podcast. My name is Michael Notbaum. I'm here with my partner in crime, Andrew Hook.
Good to be with you guys.
So today, we are going back and forth on a title. Andrew, you know, given his legal background, wanted to name this episode Pitfalls That You Want to Avoid When Real Estate Investing. I just said, don't be that guy. So we're going to do kind of a case study on another podcast that we had listened to, dove into a little bit about what happened, and then tie it into some just normal facts that, you know, when you're looking at these different markets across the country, what should you be looking at to avoid so you don't end up like that guy?
Yeah. And I think the more that you say that, I like that title better and better. So, you know, I think this is such an interesting and timely topic because we're starting to see the market turn a little bit and the tides are changing somewhat. And you're going to see some of the people that made bad investment decisions in the last few years, when nothing could go wrong for a while, all of a sudden they're going to start to pay for it because circumstances have changed. And you know, the case study that we're going to highlight today is a story out of Houston. And I remember a couple weeks ago sitting on my couch, and I get a text from another buddy who's in real estate, and the headline's like, you know, landlord goes belly up with 7,000 doors foreclosed or something. And, you know, this guy is a doomsdayer for sure. And so he's got all this other, you know, rhetoric coming with it. And so I screenshotted it and I sent it to you, and you were like, somebody else just sent this to me. So, like, you know, bad news travels fast, of course. But, you know, what we're talking about is, an investment group out of Houston that was run by Jay Cajavelli, I think is how you say his name, but he's Apple's Way Investment Group, and did a kind of a superstar rise, thousands and thousands of doors under ownership and under management through syndication within a couple of years. And then in the past few months has just had a catastrophic downfall.
Well, if you look at what he did, right? So he was in IT, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, an immigrant to the United States, worked in IT, sick of the 9-to-5, and wanted to do something more, create passive wealth through real estate. And so, you know, hats off to him, did the right thing with that step. But then listening to some of the stuff that he did, you know, you don't go from, you know, being an IT guy to all of a sudden being an expert on running huge syndication deals overnight. And that seems like kind of what happened.
Sure.
And, you know, given, yes, the market has shifted, which basically put him in this spot, but some of the simple fundamentals of owning properties, I think, is where he went wrong originally. Mm-hmm. I don't care what the market is. You know, if you take over a property and you're allowing trash to pile up, you have rat infestation, I mean, that's not a good look no matter what market you're in.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's kind of the scenario he ended up in, but then compounded with what happened, turned into disaster for him.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, anytime you see someone do sort of a meteoric rise super fast, and they've gone from, you know, in this instance, 0 doors to I think almost 8,000 doors in a couple of years, that's like Blackstone growth of being done by a non super hedge fund, you know?
Right.
And that should open some eyes just as far as, like, you know, you're growing too fast, and you know, a lot of times that leads to catastrophe. And so, you know, but I think if at the end of the day, if you go back and you look at what he's done here, a lot of these things are sort of, if we go back to the basics and say, how do we evaluate a deal? How do we analyze a deal? How do we make sure that we're stress testing a deal? Some of these things could have definitely been avoided. And, you know, it's a good lesson of be true to your box, right? Like, you know, we always talk about, we like to blend the box a little bit, but you still got to have your parameters and say, this thing has to perform at a certain level before we'll even look at it. And so, I mean, I love the lesson and the case study here of back to the basics, stick to your principles, and invest wisely.
And what's funny about the buy box is, like, some of the hedge funds that we work with, their buy box is the buy box.
Sure.
You know, you say we kind of blend it a little bit because it's basically you and I making the decision. Hey, you think we could still make money on this? Yep. Okay, cool. Let's move forward. But if you're big, and especially once you start getting to 8,000 doors, if you still have that, maybe let's wing it. That's definitely a recipe for disaster. So I think lesson one is whatever your defined buy box is, hold it accountable.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, it's kind of where's the backstop, right? You know, because if you start to slide, well, you know, one of the ones we ran into recently was we were trying to sell a property that was 1.05 acres. And one of the hedge funds said, we won't buy it because it's over an acre. So, I mean, you and I look at that deal and say, okay, well, yeah, it's slightly over, but we could still make something happen. But if it's that size, there's no chance it's going. So,
right.
But yeah, so let's dive in and let's talk a little bit about, you know, let's play the Monday morning quarterback, the hindsight 2020, and say, what did this guy do wrong? Because again, the lessons I think are just invaluable. So the one thing I think starting point that I saw was, you know, we talk about when we look at any investment, we stress test it to say, what happens if rates rise? What happens if regulations change? What happens in a worst case scenario so that we can still exit out here and not be in a bad spot? And, you know, you look at a lot of these doors were acquired in the 2020 to 2022 range with historically low interest rates. And so you go into something at 3% on an interest only loan and you say, you know, man, this thing, it works at 3%, but I'm on adjustable rate. Well, I mean, it is foreseeable that your rates are going to increase on an adjustable rate. It's not like you've locked yourself in for 5-10 years and you have enough time to exit out of that asset. I mean, adjustable rates can be a viable product, but when you're not running your numbers to make sure that, hey, if things bump 3-4%, which, you know, probably could have been foreseeable at that time, and now your asset doesn't cash flow, that's a huge issue.
Right. Well, you look at, okay, the economy shut down for 2 years. Mm-hmm. We're printing money, giving it to everyone. I remember my cousin was working for Hyundai, and the pandemic happened. Of course, you're not working. So then started going back to work, and they said, hey, you can come back to work, but you know, you got to start next week. Meanwhile, he's getting a check from the government, which was, I think, $1,600 a month, more than he was making when he was working there. Mm-hmm. So he's like, no, I'm good. And I mean, this is, you know, totally different story for a different time, but that's real life for a lot of people. So now we have this huge amount of money that all these people get, and what could possibly go wrong? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, the government's been shut down for, you know, not just the government, but the whole economy has been shut down. We're printing money left and right to try to offset this. Obviously, it's a recipe for disaster. Inflation skyrockets. The only way to offset it is interest rates. It's like you kind of got to at some point step back and say, what's common sense application here?
Sure.
You know, it's just basic fundamentals of economics.
Yeah.
You know, we can't keep sustaining this.
Right.
And that's really what I think a lot of people just didn't want to believe.
Well, and I mean, we always talk about mindset, right? So if you get used to interest rates at 2-3%, well, it could never go up. But, you know, the truth is it can go up, and we've seen it happen very quickly, of course. And, you know, unfortunately for this group, they got kind of hammered with that quick rate increase. But it's a good lesson of, you know, try to avoid adjustable rates if possible. But if you're going to go with an adjustable rate just to make a deal work, make sure you got a short runway for an exit, because you don't want to be holding that long term. And I think
what's the pro forma look like on the worst case scenario?
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't create operating agreements when you start a company for when everyone's making money and we're printing cash. That's why we have the operating agreement in place. No, it's for when everything falls apart, what happens?
Sure.
And I think most people just don't plan for that. And unfortunately for this guy, you know, to me, originally, I was very inspired by his story. Working 8-to-5, wants a better life, wants to create passive income, learn from somebody that does it at a very high level, replicated it, and to be able to do what he did in that short period of time is pretty insane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't a hedge fund, like you said. This is a guy who I think he's from India and ended up doing syndication deals totaling 8,000 doors.
Right.
I mean, that's significant.
Yeah. And again, I don't think we want this podcast to be rip the guy down.
No, it's just like, okay, but then what did he do wrong?
Right. Yeah.
That's where we can all learn.
What lessons can we have take away? So, you brought up some damage and things along those lines, but so let's talk about deferred maintenance, because deferred maintenance is another one of these that I think people look at cap rates and they look at numbers and they get so excited about that, thinking this is going to be a great asset, but maybe they're not looking at, man, this thing needs a lot of work. And so we've had some of that as our own experience. So
So even if you're like a, you know, you're an investor who only has a few doors and they're single family homes, or an investor has 8,000 doors, deferred maintenance is something that's going to come up no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for this philosophy that unfortunately a lot of people had, sounds like this guy did, I'm going to buy it and then I'm really not going to do much of anything and I'm just going to raise rent.
Mm-hmm.
And it did work for a little bit, but then as the market shifted, he had no contingency plan for what to do in that case. You know, like when you and I buy stuff, we think, okay, and you know, we've had this conversation many times. So whenever you're really nice to people, typically you get taken advantage of. Unfortunately, we're like the nicest landlords ever. So we end up getting calls from them after we've sold it to somebody else. Like, can you guys buy this back so that we can get our sink fixed? But that's a different story for a different time. And I think that that's part of it. Like, you know, you're not going to buy something, increase rents without doing anything.
Yeah.
And that's what he thought was going to happen.
Well, and I think, again, you know, talk about go back to your principles of buying an asset with the goal or the intent of increasing rents through actually making improvements is a tried and true method. You know, I mean, that's a lot of what Rich Dad Poor Dad is based upon, you know, and that whole philosophy. And so there's absolutely a methodology there that works. But if you're underfunding what you think your improvements are going to cost or look like, or if you are in a position where you're just not doing them, you're only doing half the equation. You're not going to get, right. You know, and if these properties actually had been refurbished, you probably could have increased rent somewhat. I don't know if they would have increased to where he was projecting that they would go to, but you could have probably increased rent somewhat. You know, but if you're underfunding or you're not going to do them, you're never going to get there.
And that's the part of the equation I think most people don't do.
Sure.
You know, like, okay, it's going to cost me X amount of dollars to fix this up. And if I do it, I can increase cash flow by this amount. Okay, so now what is that cap rate? But now if interest rates go up from my 3.2% or 3.6% loan and now they're 7, what does the cash flow that I just increased this offset this?
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you probably, you know, single family investments to thousands and thousands of units on apartments, that's the same equation.
Sure.
Cash in, cash out. What do I need to do to make my cash in bigger?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does that make sense given that we're basically at a risky mortgage? I mean, it could go up.
Yeah.
And for it to be at historically low interest rates for a long period of time, it's going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then, like I said, common sense. We printed a bunch of money. How do we offset that? You're going to have to increase interest rates.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the other stuff, too, that I think jumped out in this kind of case study is, and we talked about this, too, but paying attention to your tenants' needs. I mean, a lot of the reports coming out of this thing now are like the squalor that these conditions, these units were in and the people were living in, and they weren't doing anything about it. And it got to the point that it was so bad that you have the mayor of Houston actually going to visit these properties and doing press conferences from them. And, you know, you get on people's radar like that on a big scale and you're bound to have more problems happen. But, you know, listening to your tenants and again, I mean, we kid around about the fact that you're too nice, you get taken advantage of, but there's a balance to strike there. I mean, you
know,
it's
a human element. Yeah. Like you said, I mean, you and I talked on the legacy piece, like we're all people,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether you're the landlord or you're the tenant, we're still people.
Right.
You know, and I think if you just take that approach, would you want to live here?
Yeah.
I think it goes a long way.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and again, I mean, back to your basics, right? And, you know, stay tried and true about what you're doing, but, you know, certainly paying attention to what their needs are. And you know, that parlays in the fact, too, of if you're not doing these things, how do you really expect to increase rent? And I think there's so much, I mean, we see it on the wholesale side, we see it on the long-term hold side, but people's projection of where rent can go is very similar to what people's projections of ARV looks like, right? I mean, it's like, it's so bloated where you're like, where are you getting these figures from? Are you actually, do you know your market? Or are you actually doing market research to figure it out? Or are you just throwing out, you know, numbers in the sky to say, well, if I get here, then this can work. And that I think was missed here too, because a lot of these assets are acquired in areas that are low income. You know, you have people scraping by that can barely pay rent. You know, they'd be able to put together rent 1 month, but not the rest. How are you going to start increasing those or doubling those? You're going to lose your whole tenant base.
Right. And you think about like, so a lot of those low income investments, a lot of times are Section 8.
Mm-hmm.
Section 8 is going to have already standards in place.
Sure.
In order for the property to be Section 8, it has to meet these standards.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like not Section 8, but basically, mm-hmm. you know, the same overall vibe as Section 8, just didn't have to meet any of the standards, and they right. didn't do it. And unfortunately, you know, it's sad for the people that live there, and it's sad for him too, because I think that, you know, it sounds like he had the right initial mindset, but this is kind of like a lesson of, you know, you learn from people that are doing this, and then you think you can just go and do it all on your own. Like, you don't have to do that. I think you can actually, there's a lot of value in being a part of another group investing in real estate. Like, I wouldn't personally go in and start buying a bunch of apartment complex because
mm-hmm.
I don't, that's not my forte.
Sure.
I'd love to have a bunch of apartment complexes in our portfolio one day, but we're not going to go out and buy 700 units tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's probably the difference between why we're not in this, you know, the mayor's not doing a press conference at any of our properties today.
Well, you know, and again, I think lots of good lessons to take away here from this. And you know, I certainly don't want it to be a teardown of anybody doing syndication deals or this individual. But, you know, the hammering back to make sure you're doing the right things, make sure that you're checking your investments and you're actually making sure that they make sense on you know, really pencil the deal. Don't just, you know, visualize it as you want to visualize it. You got to actually go through that nitty gritty and make sure that it works. And that's the only way that you're going to time and time again, be successful on your deals.
Well, and I kind of look at it like this. So, you know, talking about this episode with you prior, I just kind of did some research on markets across the country, right? So everyone wants to, you know, if you want to invest in real estate, you probably want to know which markets are good or bad. Now, given the last 5 years, this list that I'm going to share, I would say most of the time hasn't come to complete fruition. Meaning like these are the same markets that we've kind of been hearing about for a long time. But I think that that's just like because of their enormous amount of growth.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, you know, they're going to be right. So San Jose, California, Austin, Texas, Phoenix, Arizona, San Diego, San Francisco, and Seattle are all predicted by Forbes, Goldman Sachs, many of the top financial firms as markets that are going to see a decline of over 25%.
Wow.
And when you think about like San Francisco, like a single family home there is probably $3 million
mm-hmm.
or more maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like a basic home that might be $300,000 in another market.
Mm-hmm.
So 25%, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. I think you've hit the nail on the head in the sense of like markets can go up, but they can only go up so high, you know? And so if your only exit strategy on an investment is, you know, appreciation, you're not really stress testing that model. And, you know, because you can never predict where appreciation is going to go. And, you know, some of those markets may not hit that, and they may withhold, and they may, you know, they go against what the data shows. You know, you never know. And some of them may do worse than that. So it's just
that's why you want to have multiple factors.
Yeah.
You know, so and I think probably given this case study and given what has happened over the last 2 years, the number one thing that you should look at is, what is your financing going to be for this property? And then what's my worst case scenario 24 months from now?
Right.
Because a lot of those adjustable rates do have a cap.
Sure.
So they're not going to go from 3.5 to 10, you know, if the market were to continue to increase. They'll cap out at a certain percentage. But I would just run your data. Okay, if it goes to this, am I at least breaking even?
Sure.
You know, because we talk a lot about all the tax strategies, and obviously on these huge apartment complexes, you're talking about significant tax strategies. But if you're not applying basic fundamentals to the investing strategy to begin with, it negates all of that gain.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I was reading another article about the actual foreclosure on one of these complexes, and the lender took it back in the foreclosure process, and they took it back at a number that publicly they're saying is a good number. But if you actually underwrite that deal, even at the number they took it back at, seems hard to offload to me. So it'll be very interesting to see like how far some of the stuff has to fall to get back to normal to actually make some sense in some of these things. But, you know, I found it to be it was eye-opening in the sense of it's attention-grabbing, right? The headline's huge. It's huge numbers of doors. But we talk about the fact that investing in real estate may not be easy to do, but it's simple.
Right.
If you stick to what you know to say, you know, I got to be true to my principles, got to be true to my numbers. And if you keep it simple like that, you're going to continue to do well.
Right. And I mean, I think you hit it on the head. That's exactly it. You know, we don't want this episode to by any means be negative, but sure. I think it's just there's a difference between like being pessimist and being realist. And like this is a reality for this guy who rose to stardom in the Houston market as one of the biggest landlords. And now he's facing, you know, I don't know if there's legal repercussions based on how he structured things, but it's, you know, you almost think when you do this, you know, what are you doing it for? Mm-hmm. You know, when you start to see some of the writing on the wall and things are shifting and you're not making any kind of pivots, that's also kind of a red flag to me. It's like you got to kind of be adaptable. Right. Otherwise, you're going to be left behind.
Well, I think it's also as investors, we're always kind of looking on the horizon of what's going to happen. And I think it's, you know, another good drive home of the fact that like really do think there's opportunities on the horizon, unfortunate for some and going to be a heck of an opportunity for others. And, you know, get your parameters in order, get your house in order, your cash in order, do what you need to do, because there really are going to be some opportunities in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, totally agree.
So anyway, anything else?
I think that pretty much summarizes it. I think just basically have your parameters, follow them. That's step one, which is a lot of times very difficult for people. I mean, even us. I mean, like we just said, I think we might be able to pull this one off.
Squirrel.
Exactly. And, you know, if they're in a market that's historically been very forgiving, it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
But as we start moving into some uncertain markets, you never know.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us for another episode, guys. Always fun as usual. And take
us away. Until next time, onward.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Legacy Wealth Code Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, click subscribe now and never miss an episode. Until next time, onward.